I am Nicolas Bornozis of Capital Link, and I would like to welcome you all to Capital Link's Trending News podcast series. We are delighted to have with us today Mr. Robert Bugby, President and Director of Scorpio Tankers, and Mr. James Doyle, Head of Corporate Development and Investor Relations. Our discussion will be on company strategy and developments, and then on the product tanker sector fundamentals and outlook. Before we start our Q&A, just a reminder of the disclaimer that this webinar is for informational purposes only and educational purposes. It is not investment advice or advice of any kind. And then in terms of logistics, I would like to, we have a Q&A, that discussion that we will have, and then we will be taking questions from the floor. So please feel free to submit your questions through the Q&A button at the bottom of the screen, and Robert and James will be addressing them after our discussion. So again, I'd like to welcome you both. Thank you for being with us today. And I will start by saying that you had a great Q1 2024 quarter. My questions will focus, as I mentioned, on the main pillars of your strategy, namely debt reduction, operational efficiency, capital allocation, and then move into the product tanker sector. The first thing that I'd like to touch upon is the continued debt reduction. Net debt at the end of Q1 stood at $811 million. As mentioned during the conference call, this is close to the scrap value of your fleet, and it is actually at the lower end of your target debt level. Today, you announced an additional debt reduction, prepaying in June, $223 million from the term portion of your $1 billion facility. So what is the benefit of this debt reduction, given where you already are in terms of debt level? And what is the ultimate debt level that you're seeking?
Sure. First, thank you very much, Nick. I think that the payment we announced this morning isn't obviously going to be a reduction, further reduction of net debt. That's a reduction of gross debt. But that, you know, whether we call it debt or gross debt, the reduction of debt is allowing us to obviously save on interest rate costs. And now we're able to save on amortization. So the material benefit to the shareholder is that it doesn't really matter what point the market is at. Obviously, we'd love the market to be stronger, but regardless of where the market is going forward, the operating cash breakevens as a result of lower interest and lower amortization are substantially lower. And, you know, I don't think people have really yet had the benefit from what we've been saying to fully realize this. But as we said on the call, the third quarter last year, our operating cash breakeven on an apples to apples basis was closer to 20,000. And the cash breakeven as we enter the third quarter this year will be, you know, round about 12,500. That's a big movement downwards. So that means that, you know, in theory, the you know, if you were to repeat the earnings of 2023 in the market, we would earn more, the same as 24. You're just earning more at each different time. So going forward, we have even more you know, free cash flow in the company. So that's the main benefit of this that we're getting. And it's obviously a permanent thing. It's when you do that, it permanently improves the company.
You also answered my next question, which was exactly the lower cash breakevens. And that, I assume, is part the savings from from interest that you pay on debt reduction. Yeah. It's also the operational efficiency, because we have a very modern fleet, and obviously that creates a lot of leverage at on the bottom.
Yeah, it creates leverage, and it creates a great deal of comfort. I mean, I think we can all agree that, you know, COVID was when we didn't have planes flying in the sky or cars going on our roads, was a really tough market for the product market. And so what, you know, once we get down into those levels of 12 and a half or so, and going forward, we would expect them to go even lower. that, you know, for us to be able to, you know, have operating cash breakevens, you know, at or below those levels that we saw during COVID would be fantastic. And this is for the total fleet. If you had it, obviously, with our charters that we have out, they're higher than but that.
So that would mean that that the rates are even lower for the actual spot fleet itself.
So I think that's fantastic.
Absolutely. So now let's move into capital allocation. Actually, I assume that debt reduction will continue to be part of your capital allocation. We can talk about that as we go into this section of our discussion. Now, I will start with your share. Your share has been one of the best performing stocks in the tanker sector. Last Friday, you closed at a new high of $81. As we speak now, it's above 82. You started the year at $62.52, and now you are at 82. So while I realize that you cannot disclose NAV, I wanted to ask you, is there still a discount to NAV at current share price levels?
That's a very, very, very subtle way of asking what is our NAV. So, you know, we're not going to discuss what our NAV is.
Obviously, yeah.
I think that, look, the key underlying performance. Now, we can do things in terms of buying back stock or paying down debt or whatever to, let's say, finesse the value of the stock. But the real thing that's going to drive the stock even above NAV is going to be the combination of security of earnings, a lack of fear of a fall, and the actual earnings themselves. So I think that, you know, what we've done with this debt reduction is taken a lot of the fear of a fall out. We've made, you know, what we should have if we were to do it in a different terms is a better multiple at any point in the market. And I think that you're seeing signs that, you know, that because of this unique situation that there is, that, you know, NAV itself may not be necessarily, you know, the adequate or the right way of looking at it at this point in the market. But
okay,
we'll see.
That's fair enough. The reason I was asking about the NAV, and we'll go into that, is because your capital allocation strategy has been skewed towards significant share repurchases.
Sure. And we have, you know, we've bought tremendous amounts of stock, you know, for more than any of the other companies. But the calculation of, you know, stock is, you know, is where you're trading at, you know, against the intrinsic value and the volume of stock there is there. And, you know, we haven't spoken about our buying points before, and we don't intend to do that again.
So just to remind our listeners, I think, of the key figures, since January 1st of last year and through March 31, you have generated $1.3 billion in EBITDA and $777 million in adjusted net income. So in terms of capital allocation, you reduced debt by $557 million. That does not include the 223 that you just announced. You paid $79 million in dividends, and you repurchased, as you mentioned, $490 million worth of shares. So, in the conference call, you mentioned that you will continue to favor buybacks over dividends, and I wanted to ask you if you intend to continue with this strategy, or maybe given where the share price is today and where the company is today in terms of liquidity, robust balance sheet, and so on, whether you might change the mix.
Well, I think, you know, what we had said on the conference call is the, you know, you need two parameters in terms of that. So we said that to the extent that there is a, you know, a dislocation between NAV and stock price, that we would prefer to buy back stock than pay dividends, that then increase dividends substantially. You know, that doesn't mean that we're not going to, you know, we're going to focus on the we're focusing on anyway the renewable dividend. So you could see us do both. You could see us, you know, raise the regular dividend as well. You know, that depends on that matrix that's going on there. But what we're not going to do is go to these kind of big payout dividends. We're not going to go to dividend payouts that are dependent upon EPS or loan to value or any of those things. We simply just believe that that's not in the long-term interest of the shareholder.
Thank you. Well, my next question goes into fleet renewal, because one of the parameters of or one of the use of capital allocation is fleet renewal. Here you are again in a great position. We have no new buildings on order. And as stated in the conference call, given the modernity of your fleet, you have the least need for fleet renewal. So what is next in terms of the fleet? Even though you have a young fleet, 8.2 years on average, you still have a few older vessels, and actually you recently sold a few. So what are the thoughts in terms of your fleet? Are you likely to add, to sell a few more, maybe add some more to the fleet?
Well, first of all, our oldest vessel is, you know, it would still be one of, you know, most of our competitors' newest vessels. So, you know, our oldest vessels are not really old. Correct. They're just old relative to our fleet. Correct. And when you have values of these vessels, you know, so very high, and you are and you have been trading at a, you know, discount to the NAV, then I think the correct thing to do is just to gently prune the tree, and as we've been doing, and, you know, going along and selling one or two of these types of vessels along the way. And you know, we don't have to aggressively do it. We can just respond to strong bids. So I would think we would continue very much what we've done in, you know, in the last 6 months to a year. You know, it's not a drastic sell. It's just sort of, you know, clipping a branch here or there.
Is that to some extent reflecting the asset values in the market today? I mean, what are they? The asset values.
The asset values are very high, but they are, you know, justifiably high, because not just the spot market is strong, but more importantly, the new building price is very strong. Which, you know, if we look at asset values, they have a very high correlation to the combination of replacement value and the, you know, the 3-year time charter rate. And replacement value has been moving up, and the 3-year charter rate has not just been moving up, but it is, you know, there's a lot of interest across the board in both sizes of LRs and MRs.
So what is your commercial strategy today, given where the rates are?
We'll continue. We're very confident to the market going forward. You know, we said on the conference call we expected the market to increase. It has increased, and we expect it to continue to increase. We think that there's been a lot of pent-up demand, a lot of hesitation where people have been looking for energy prices to collapse, a lot of hesitation allowed because, you know, in the Northern Hemisphere, we've had a very slow start to spring, summer. It hasn't been very warm. So not much energy required for cooling, but at the same time, it hasn't been very cold, so not much energy required for heating. And we're now starting to see that pick up. We're seeing consumption move higher. We're seeing the world economy get stronger. The data points across the board, and, you know, reference points, people like the IEA or anybody, I haven't seen a report that says there's going to be less products and crude requirement in the third quarter than there is now. So we would, and then of course, you after this, you have the strongest season of the fourth and the first quarter again. So we would actually expect that you actually don't have a soft season this summer. It's if we just sort of just move through it, through the strength of the market itself.
Robert, that took us right into the next question.
So that means that we're happy in the spot market. We also view the time charter market similar to our sales. You know, there are certain key partners we have. We have a lot of cargo with that, you know, are interested to time charter our ships, and the rates are where they are. And, if, you know, we will probably do what we've done in the past, let out, you know, 2, 3, 4 vessels, maybe a few more. We also have our vessels we fixed on charter 2 years ago or so. They're coming up for renewal. So this combination will allow us to, of adding a few more, just a handful, plus renewing the old one, should allow us to lift our time charter book in total dollars. You know, reasonably significant, while still keeping us with a very high majority of our vessels in the spot market.
Great time to do so. And that takes me to the next question I wanted to ask you about the sector fundamentals. You described the demand side. We all know about the order book. So is the current strength of the market a combination of both, a very tight equilibrium between demand and supply? Is it mainly supply driven? Everybody seems to be confident that we are in a new era regarding the tanker market. So if I can have your insight.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether we are in a new era in the tanker market yet. In total, there's still some, you know, we still have to recognize that we are getting the benefit of two wars, right, that are going on. We're getting the benefit of the Red Sea being closed. So, but what we are have being is more comfortable if the Red Sea opens, because we now have empirical data that when we compare the market to when the Red Sea was completely safe, like 2023, we have seen that there's very little change in the market at each supply and demand data point in overall products between the 2023 earnings in MRs than 2024. In the LR2s, if it's been a strong period, it's been about $10,000 a day delta, and a weak period, $5,000. So I think we are getting more comfortable that the market will remain strong on the fundamentals, even if for some reason the Red Sea would open up. I think that's a very, very important change for us psychologically as a company that we've monitored and seen in the last month. I think that the tanker market itself, we're not sure that it's a, you know, crude products, I think, is slightly different. It's been benefiting from a position, the overall tanker market. I don't know. I mean, it's questionable whether the Aframax market, I think, will benefit. We've got the Transmontane pipeline. We've got a number of Aframax areas expanding their production. That's good. I still think there's a question mark over overall VLCC demand in the short term. We're not yet sure that OPEC itself may raise production come June, but the Middle Eastern countries of OPEC may not. They may just be leaving room in total for, you know, Brazil, Namibia, Guyana, the OPEC countries plus the non-OPEC countries in their production, rather than lifting Saudi crude or Kuwaiti crude, etc. So we have to see that.
Thank you. So I understand that geopolitics, especially the Red Sea, they play a role, but they are not a major factor in today's market strength.
The fundamental strength. No, they're just right at the margin at the top of the LR2 market. But otherwise, for the product market, doesn't really matter very much. So,
what about sanctions? Are sanctions a factor in the market today?
Yeah, I think sanctions are a factor because, it's restricting the freedom of movement. It's creating extra ton miles elsewhere. It's creating some inefficiency in the market. All those things are positives. And we would expect sanctions to continue, even if there is some kind of peace, or if Ukraine are forced to a peace position at some time this year, we would expect the sanctions to continue.
So, last question to ask you. What about regulation? I mean, how are you impacted in a way by the European EU ETS? How do you see the overall regulatory environment progressing in terms of decarbonization?
James, you're a youngster benefiting for the future of this. Would you like to answer that?
Sure. Well, I think we see regulations just increasing over time. Yes, to the EU ETS. I think we're well prepared for that, operating an eco fleet. And as you look forward with the IMO regulations, these will have an impact, I think, to start on older vessels. As we look forward, it's certainly impacted what type of ship you're going to order, what type of engine you're going to put on board. And there's still a lot of questions around what's going to be the preferred fuel, especially for us with where our vessels go. They go everywhere, and you need to be able to load that, you know, if it's ammonia, if it's hydrogen, you need to feel confident that that's going to be available. And right now it's not. So I think there's a lot of questions. I think we feel well positioned. And going forward, you know, we'll be quick to follow. But right now we're in a great spot.
Thank you. And I already factored in the questions I was asking you, those that came from the floor. We are approaching the end of our discussion, unless something else comes in. Robert, if I can remind you, in an earlier podcast we had, you had mentioned that the only thing that worries you is that there is nothing to worry about. So is this still the case?
No, I think I would change that statement to the only thing that terrifies me, not worries, terrifies me now, is the what I don't know about. I mean, it's really very strong, you know, market environment. You've got, you know, us all in the industry have managed to take this opportunity to deleverage. There are many classes of ship types that are putting pressure into shipyards. Shipyards have, you know, able to get a lot of, you know, price leverage in their negotiations, as well as payment terms. Leverage in the negotiations. Plus, as James said, there's going to be this increasing environmental changes too. So at some point you're gone, and you have an aging fleet. Finally, the product tanker fleet is aging. I mean, we're actually now not talking about ships that are becoming 15 years old in the next year or two or three. It's ships that are going to come 20 years in the next year or two or three, and that's a, you know, a mass that's proved in the history to be a much higher hurdle, even for crude oil. And, you know, in the product market, that's kind of a hurdle too far, I think. And so things are good. And, you know, that's what I would think at the moment.
I would like to thank you both for this very interesting, as always, podcast. Before we conclude, any final remarks from you, Robert, or you, James?
No, I'm hoping that the stock will close at 82 because, or above, because that will mean that Project 82 is alive and well.
Well, the Project 82 exactly was for your stock to trade above 82. Right now, as we're closing our discussion, it is trading at 82 spot 62. So
it's not closed yet. So
it didn't close yet, but Project 82 seems to be in full-blown development.
it is coming along nicely. Yeah.
So I would like to thank you. Thank you.
There are a lot of dollars from the market and cash flow being added to the budget for Project 82. So, and that's what matters at the end of the day in shipping, is the actual rate structures and cash flow themselves.
And you have a, you know, your large cap, large liquidity, so you are, you know, everything is aligned for.
Yeah, and we really, really take this opportunity to thank yourself and, you know, all of the shareholders along the way that have helped us and given supported us and given us this opportunity to be where we are today. So
it's a privilege to have you both. Thank you again very much. And to remind our listeners that we had Robert Buckby, president and director of Scorpio Tankers, and James Doyle, head of corporate development and investor relations. And this webinar will be available for replay shortly after the live session. Again, Robert and James, thank you very much for being with us. I found it very interesting that our, you know, we had great attendance as always. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Nicholas.
Bye-bye.
Bye.